Joining us right now on the line is a guest that's going to give us an update on what's been happening with the Mohawk Nation news, as well as her personal story of being attacked at the Akwesasne Canada-U.S. border on June 2008. And I'd like to welcome to the show today, Cantonitha Horn. Hi, Cantonitha.
Hi.
Thanks. Michael. Thanks for returning to the show.
Oh, glad to be here. I hear that you might not be around for long, or has that changed?
No. Well, right now, what's going on is we're hoping for an appeal on the decision. But it looks like the CRTC has made the decision that the 12th of February is when we're supposed to lose our license. So they've given us a date. So on the 13th of February, nobody knows, what's going to happen.
Well, you know, I guess media is getting your story out on the media is probably very dangerous for the government, because in my case, there was never anything in the media about what happened to me, and it's really a very big story.
I know, that's why I'm glad that I was able to find one article on it, and I guess it's fitting that the article is listed on the website Censored News, because
that's right.
Yeah, because it's like your story is pretty much been censored. Could you give us an update? What has happened?
Well, they tried to censor me completely from the earth, I guess. Well, it happened. Well, what happened? I guess you've already given some background about it. But I we went to the border. Me and two other people. We drove to the Akwesasne border and drove up to the Canada CBSA. That's the Canada Border Agents. And they pulled us over. And there was nothing on me at all, and nothing, as far as I knew, on any of my passengers. But there was a female passenger, and they wanted her to get out. They said that she had an outstanding warrant, which I didn't know about. And so she was reluctant to get out. And they pulled her out. They pushed her to the ground. They handcuffed her and took her away. And I saw this, and I really, really got scared, because they really didn't have any reason to stop me. And they all came swarming around me. There was about 14 of them. And one was giving the orders through a cell phone. He was getting orders from somewhere and telling them to come around and to pull me out. And I argued with him. I said, I haven't done anything wrong, and I don't have any outstanding charges or contraband or anything. And they couldn't give me a reason for pulling me out, except saying that for me to get out. And I didn't want to be mistreated. Mm-hmm. And the others, she had been mistreated. And they weren't giving me any guarantees. I said, what are you going to do to me? And they said that wasn't for them to say to me. So anyways, and then I didn't have any witnesses around. And I was really scared. So these very large males, and there were two females, they came around. And when they did that, I said, uh-oh, there's a lot of trouble for me here. And they pounced on me, and then they started pulling me out with they pulled my left arm, and they tried to break my arm. They twisted it, and it felt like they were trying to break it, and it was really painful. So I was screaming and hollering and saying, let go, let go. And I tried to pull my arm away. And I thought, well, there's something wrong here. I think they're after me more than they are after that passenger. So, because they certainly knew who I was, they had already looked through all my papers, and, we had waited for a whole hour while they checked and verified everything. And then there was nobody around at that time, but after an hour, this big swarm of commandos came around. And anyway, that's when I said I'd been beaten up before by the police. And there have been a few attempts on my life, once in 1990 and then once in 1995. And then again, this time, in 2008. So they finally got me out, and they handcuffed me, and they took me inside, and put me in a cell. They roughed me up, and they kept on tightening the handcuffs, and then my hands were getting redder and redder. There was no blood circulation, and they were behind. It was behind my back, and they kept lifting my arms up so that it would hurt me, and it was hurting me. And I kept telling them to stop and to loosen the cuffs, and but they seemed to know what they were doing. And then inside the cell, one of the officers stood behind me, and one stood in front of me, the one behind me had his hands on my pants and trying to pull it down. And the woman in front of me was trying to pull my head down between her crotch area. So I felt like something serious was going to happen here. And I felt like I was that there was going to be a sexual assault happening to me. And that's when I began having the heart attack. And then my brother came in at that time and stopped it. And but they also had with them a taser. So they were going to do something to me. They didn't use it, but they had it with them. And I guess everybody knows what a taser is. Mm-hmm. And a person of my age could be killed. You know, if you get mm-hmm. all those electrical volts, it could kill you. So I don't know whether the stress hold that they were using on me was what they were thinking was going to finish me off. But anyway, so that's what happened. And I didn't bring that up about what they did to me mm-hmm. in the cell, because I was afraid that if I said anything about that at this time, you know, before I finalized and got my charges and everything else out of that court system, and I became, you know, they gave me an absolute discharge. Mm-hmm. I think that had I mentioned anything of that to anybody, mm-hmm. that would have been a reason to, I don't know,
right.
cut me
they
up
used
or
it against
tell
you.
Everybody I'm a nut or, mm-hmm. or whatever. I was afraid anyway. I was scared.
So when you mentioned that your brother helped you get out of the cell, is that, because I think I saw it in the article, was your brother able to get access because he's a lawyer? Is that
yeah
him? Right.
Well, he came in, he says that's my sister, mm-hmm. but then they wouldn't let him see me, so he says, well, I'm her lawyer. So then when they took they stopped what they were doing, they took the handcuffs off, and then they put me on a chair, they sat me down. By then then he could see that I was in serious trouble. He said, well, he could see that my eyes were glazed and my voice and my face was getting flushed, and I was breathing, you know, my breathing was hard, and he knew that I was in very serious trouble. So he's the one that called for an ambulance and got me and rushed me to the hospital. And they told me at the hospital I'd had a heart attack.
Now this is a shocking thing with this whole story about what you went through, and then to have the CVSA or the Border Commandos charge you with assault. That's where it seems, you know, that's the crazy part in this, it seems to me. And then, you know, if this is 2 years ago or, getting closer to 3 years ago, it seems like the justice system is moving slower. And then what happened on your court case at the end of January? I know you mentioned that the charges were discharged, but I guess how did it all happen?
Well, what they did was that if I pleaded guilty, then they would drop the assault charges, and they would give me an absolute discharge on the obstruction charge. See, they said that I had obstructed the officers, but they said I also had assaulted them. Now there's a list of 14 of them that were there. I've got the list and all the names, and so I think what it ended up was that if I didn't plead guilty, then there would have been a trial, and it would have been a very expensive trial, and I'm an elder, and I'm a senior citizen, and I get a pension like anybody else. I'm 71 years old. And I couldn't afford to have a trial. Even with the lawyer doing what he did for me, Phil Schneider, he did a good job getting thing taken care of. It still cost me a lot of money. I still have to pay it. However, if I had gone to trial, I could never have afforded it. So what happened was the Phil Schneider, the lawyer, and the Crown Attorney agreed that if I pleaded guilty, then the assault charge would be withdrawn, if I pleaded guilty to obstruction. So I was forced to plead guilty to something I didn't do.
Well,
in order to get out of there, to get out of their system.
Well, yeah, this system's definitely a mess. And this whole, you can find more information on this whole story if you check out the article by Brenda Norrell on No Jail Time for Cantonitha Horn. It was published January 26, 2011 on the Censored News blog. And also on the Censored News blog, I did notice they had a headline, Censored News in January 2011, or More Censored News in January 2011 than any other period. So this is what the month we've just gone through, and so much has happened, and it's all, a lot of it's being censored. That's why I'm glad we're able to get some of your story out, and that's why I'd also recommend people check out another article, Cantonitha Horn Resistance, that is on the same blog, bsnorrell.blogspot.com, or the Censored News blog. And in that, it also links to an interview you did on Hidden from History Radio with Kevin Annett. And then it also links to a movie from 1969, You Are on Indian Land, by Mort Ranson. It's a National Film Board documentary that you can watch online. And this documentary from 69 was interesting because I watched it, and this situation at the border is an old issue.
Yes.
But, it seems like they've got their high-tech gear. The commandos are a bit more high-tech, but it's still this, I guess, yeah, do you have any words on this, on the You Are on Indian Land? And
well, yes, that was when we blocked that border crossing. It was in 1968, and there were 60 of us that were put in jail, but there was about 500 people there, and it was cold, December 20th, I think. And anyway, I ended up going to trial, the only one. And at that time, I was charged with beating up 23 Cornwall policemen, City of Cornwall policemen. Whoa. And, I'm not that big a person. although the border guard described me as being a large, strong 55-year-old woman. I'm not like that at all. And but at that time, that movie you know, has been on the net. It's always played in Agwizasne, and Mohawk people always see it over throughout the years. Mm-hmm. So I guess my face is still in the forefront of resistance at the border. So when I was coming through 40 years later, I guess, I don't know whether they recognized me or the name, but I go through there because that border crossing is right in the middle of the community of Agwizasne, and I have a lot of relatives there, and I visited there often. But since that time, what's happened is that border crossing has been moved right off of Cornwall Island. It's now over in the city of Cornwall.
Whoa.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was, I almost died at that border. So, you know, I don't know whether, but anyway, what happened it was very serious.
Mm-hmm.
But I did take an action, and I wanted that assault inside the customs house to be investigated.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a report on it, and I sent it to the RCMP and the OPP and also the Mohawk police and the Attorney General of Canada. I said, this is a very serious assault. And they would not, they absolutely would not investigate it. So I ended up, I went to the Federal Court of Canada, and for $2 I took an action in the federal court. Anyway, they have timelines they have to follow, so I end up getting this court order from the government, from the federal court, saying that if I want this assault investigated, I would have to pay all of the Crown's costs. And they wanted me to put on deposit $25,000 just to start in order to have this assault investigated. And do you know what the reason was that they gave?
No, what?
They said that because I live in Ganawage, which is a Mohawk community, I am not a resident of Canada.
Oh.
That was the order. That was the order that was made.
Mm-hmm. Well, what?
So, what do you think that means?
That means that you're
that we're sovereign.
Yeah, exactly. That they haven't.
That's what it means.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you know, I've tried what I did was I appealed, and then they issued that order. Again, actually, they've issued that order three times from three different federal court judges that because I live in Ganawage, I am therefore not a resident of Canada. So does that? So that means that principle applies to every Indigenous person.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is, and that's something.
That's an amazing. They had to say that. They knew I didn't have that kind of money to pay for the Crown's cost, which would have been who knows how much. It started out at $25,000 just to get them to answer, you know, the first filing that I did.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it cost them. And then after that, I would have had to pay for everything. Who can afford that? And is that... I've never heard of that. Have you?
No. But this is, it seems too much with what you've gone through, and then, you know, to expect you to have this kind of money, doesn't seem right. And, you know, for more information, if anyone wants more information on all of this, you can check out MohawkNationNews.com, and that's how you can also help Cantinith out on that site, too. Check out MohawkNationNews.com. And Cantinith O'Horn, I really hope that this isn't the last time that you're on Word of Mouth Wednesday. I hope this show can continue. But with what's gone on with the CRTC, I really don't know. But I just wanted to thank you again because, you know, your reports on MohawkNationNews.com have been some of the our most our most used and best resources. And you know, you actually introduced me, or your words introduced me to like names like Kevin Annett and Russell Means and Splitting the Sky, all people we've had on the show. Toki Tote we actually had on a few weeks ago. And you know, I just wanted to mention, even the very first interview I ever did on Word of Mouth Wednesday was based on a Mohawk Nation News article. And that was when I interviewed Bob Lovelace about the Charbot Lake situation. And when I followed that was in 2007. And then when I kept following it on Mohawk Nation News, I basically, from that whole experience, I'm skeptical of everything now. And that's why...
I hope you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'd like to thank you, you know, for waking us up.
Well, you know, you have to stay on, and I think because it's important, because the knowledge that you put out is going to rule ignorance. knowledge is what makes everybody equal. If you have the knowledge, I have the knowledge, and the people who are listening have the knowledge, then that's what I call democracy. That comes right from the Ganarigoa, the great law. So the way that the states and the corporations are keeping their power is through keeping the knowledge to themselves and keeping it from the people. And when they're giving you that kind of trouble, then that means that they don't want the free flow of knowledge. Because the free flow of knowledge is the free flow of power. That's the equalizer.
Right.
And that's why it's important for you to stay on the air. And I really congratulate you, and I give you all, everything that I, whatever I can do, you know, I hope you do stay on.
All right, thanks a lot.
You have to keep putting knowledge in the hands of the people.
That's what we're trying to do, yeah, and you're speaking the truth, and yeah, thanks a lot, Cantonitha, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
All right, that's Cantonitha Horn of the Mohawk Nation News. She's the editor and publisher of Mohawk Nation News, mohawknationnews.com. Check out the article, No Jail Time, for Cantonitha Horn. It was from January 26, 2011, by Brenda Norrell. And you can find it on the Censored News blogspot. Search Censored News in your favorite search engine.